Good morning, Aurovillians. I am Akshay and
I'm Avdhi.
And we are here with Saukarjo Ghoshal.
Saukarjo Ghoshal,
who is the acclaimed director of Rainbow Jelly, which we had the opportunity of seeing last night at the Pondicherry International Film Festival, and it was pretty great.
So thank you for coming down and having a chat with us. So how has your time in Auroville been so far?
I just came last night for the first time in my life. I was waiting for this moment to come to Pondicherry and Auroville. For the last 4 years, I've been introduced to Sri Aurobindo and Mata through their writings. But it never happened. Me and my wife really wanted. We traveled all across India. In fact, in Kolkata, we have the Aurobindo Bhavan, his birthplace. That's also very nice, and we go there. But Pondicherry never happened. So when this selection committee mailed us that you are selected in Pondicherry Film Festival, that was a sort of ecstatic moment. And that was a reason, I think, that perhaps I have not been here before to come here with my film, and that to Rainbow Jelly. So this is a nice experience, the entry of the Rainbow Jelly and Pondicherry Film Festival in Auroville. But I think now I'll get to see much of it because the daylight would help me. Because yesterday, I remember I was just moving outside the Matri Mandir, seeing it like a child and the globe. I've seen so much in photographs. And incidentally, I just went out to a shop, and there the gate was there, and I said the car stop, and get down, and went to the gate, and guard came who shouting, and I said no, it's okay, and he was not understanding my language, but it's fun.
Yeah, that's what we are also quite new here, so we try to get all our exploring done before the sun sets.
yeah,
just to be safe, because it's like this is a very, it's active mostly during the day. Uh-huh. At night, everybody just go home, relax for the next day. So let's not waste any more time and get into the questions. Do you want to get started?
Yeah. So how did you first make your way into filmmaking?
Actually, I started my career as a cartoonist, as an illustrator in a Bengali daily called, Bengali magazine called Robbar, which means Sunday. The Robbar magazine was then edited by Rituparna Ghosh, that much acclaimed director. He was the editor. And I was there, I joined there as a staff cartoonist and illustrator. But my immediate boss was another filmmaker, Bhutan filmmaker, who was also from that department. He just poked me much to write more because he could find some flair in my writing. So he just told me just to keep on writing along with drawing and all. And that took a turn. And I got slowly, not drifted, but my drawing side got very angry with me. And my writing side came up. And then I had to go for film interviews and those Bollywood interviews. And going there, I had my film background. I had my this film inclination. I had some film appreciation courses and all. Then I started thinking about films. And there are two seniors in that department. One of them turned director. Both of them have turned director, actually. One is a very celebrated writer there. And he was from film school. And he's very acclaimed because he's from SRFTI, and he was the first batch SRFTI, and he was the first boy. He poked me a lot into films. I remember his name is Chondril Bhattacharjo. He used to give me DVDs of films like Stalker or Solaris and all the Bergmans or Tarkovsky movies. And I used to come to my home and used to watch those films at night, and then used to go back to the office and had the discussion. Office work slowly got derailed and the entire thing started. Then I wrote my first script, which was Pendulum, and that was mainly on time travel. The story was like that. There's a painter who paints and who could take people into his painting, as if there's a sort of wormhole kind of thing in his painting. And through this wormhole, he can take the visitors into the real space. So that is how, that was a thriller sort of thing. That was his first film. But that film was not very much taken well in the box office, though being critically acclaimed much. but not very taken much in box office. So I thought that perhaps film is not my thing. So I left Kolkata, and me and my wife had gone to a boarding school in North Bengal. I used to teach there. But while teaching there, I was missing my films and all. But I was very, very determined at that time. It was sort of exile for us. Then I get to see a film called Masaan. Have you seen Masaan?
No.
You must. Masaan is a film of Neeraj Ghaiwan.
Mm-hmm.
It got released in 2015. It also got Uncertain Regard in Cannes Festival.
Oh.
But that doesn't matter. But what matters is the film itself. The film talks about death. According to the Indian philosophy. Anyhow, I got to see Masaan, and then I seeing Masaan, I felt that this is the film that I should have made. This film was waiting for me, but why this guy had made this film? So then I said to myself and wife that I'm leaving this school and I'm going back. And she was very happy for that. Then we came back and again we restarted. Then I made my second film, Load Shedding, for television. That was a feature film too for television. Starring Riddhi Sen, who got National Award this year for Best Actor. Riddhi was the protagonist, and that film was accepted hugely. And you can say that with that film, I became a known name in the industry. Then I had to rewrite the script of Rainbow Jelly. Before going to North Bengal, I had written the script of Rainbow Jelly, but that was a different thing. When I got gone there, I had to manage kids, many kids in the school. So when I came back, the entire perspective of children came into the scene. So then I had to rewrite the script, and then Rainbow Jelly started. So this is very elongated short brief of my career.
Okay, so it's almost like a lot of your experiences led you to the script for Rainbow Jelly. That's very cool, actually.
Yeah.
Like, you've already kind of answered this, but where do you get your, like, creative inspiration from? Like, specifically, like...
See, your creative inspirations, they actually is very intuitive. It's must be very intuitive, and it comes from everywhere you live. It is said that a filmmaker should take his... receive his content, gather his content from every bits and pieces of life that he or she sees. So that is how... Rainbow Jelly also came to me, because I'm a very foodie person. I love to cook, and I've seen that when my mood is not right, the food is not right. When my mood is very happy, the food is very very good. The people say that. So doing that, I feel that so my mind is actually affecting the taste. So which is the physical form? So then I thought that perhaps the taste can also have a mind, like the mind of light. So then I took a 180 degree turn and tried to see the human mind from the mind of the food, so or the mind of the taste. So there this thing came with the taste and key of the film.
Okay.
So it seems like you've had like a little bit of a hard time with the Indian film industry, like when you were starting off. So if there's one thing you could change, what would that be?
The one thing if I want to change about the industry is bars to express what you want to express. It is said most often, censorship is not only about the censorship of UA or you, something like that. Not only about violence, sex or politics.
Hmm.
Censorship also comes from the producers. Fine, because I have a content in my head. And I go to a producer, and the producer would say, definitely justified, which is justified because he would going to put the money. He would say that, no, this wouldn't work. From my experience, I'm saying this wouldn't work. But from the experience of human mind, we can see that most of the times, experiences never worked. Because that is how accident always happens.
Hmm.
So they say that, no, this wouldn't work. Then we have to go back and we have to rewrite the script according to the want of the producer, and also protecting the soul of the film. So there come the negotiation of the writer and the entire system. So that is how I think the film is getting censored, primarily in the writing phase. So I think the one thing I must change about the industry, if I ever get some power, is that you have to have faith on your writer. Director, I believe writer is the primary hero of the film. Director is the captain of the ship. She or she might be the captain of the ship, but the soul is being carved by the writer. So you have to trust the writer itself. The director, the producers, the actors, everyone has to trust the writer. But in our industry, the writer on whom the entire budget is being imposed, on whose work everything is being planned, but he is the most underdog in terms of payment, in terms of name. We often see a film by blah, or written and directed by blah, blah, blah. Have you ever seen that written by, if the director has not written the script, written by someone and directed by someone? No. No.
It's only directed by someone.
Yeah. But this is strange. Then everyone would say that, no, the film is a very collective medium, the music director, the editor. No, they all came because of the writer.
Yeah.
So the writer is the primary hero. That this attitude should be changed for the film industry, I think.
Okay, so you think that the writer hasn't gotten its due as yet?
Not at all. I think writer is the prime person. We must acknowledge that the writer is the prime person of the film. The director is the navigator.
Hmm.
The writer is the prime person of the film. The director has his or her own vision of making the film, but on the text.
That the writer
is. On the text.
Yeah.
That is why once there's a writer, a couple of scriptwriter for Tarkovsky, Andrei Tarkovsky, and after Solaris, when they got the award in some festival, I think Venice it would be, and they stood up on stage and said that it's great that we are getting award for a film that we have not written, because what Tarkovsky used to do, he used to get the script. And he used to rewrite the entire script. But that is very exceptional.
Yeah.
Very exceptional. Not everyone is Tarkovsky. So most of the directors, 99.99% of directors, they bank on the written script. So for them, the writers should be the prime person.
Okay. So you said that the director is like the captain of the ship. Mm-hmm. So what kind of captain are you on set? Do you run like a tight, controlled ship? Or is it a more relaxed atmosphere? And do you encourage like improvisation and things like that?
No, I would love to have that relaxed situations. But in our industry, I think in the entire world, it is curling down. That entire process of filmmaking that we used to know that has been curled down due to the reduction of number of days. Initially, we used to make a film for 30 days, 35 days, which was very tight schedule. And the people who used to come from Bombay at that time, they said 60 days, below 60 days, we cannot shoot. I had a DOP from Bombay in my first film. And when we made the schedule for 40 days, he said, I cannot shoot below 80 days.
Hmm.
That was a scene. But that changed rapidly because of the internet. Because of the internet, you have to make a film within a very low budget.
Yeah.
Now, the crux of the story is that the budget can be cuttled only by a reduction of number of days. Now they have to do that, and they are doing that. Now when they are doing that, the producer is saying that, look, they are making a very good stuff for 2 hours, for 15 or 20 days. It might not get released in theater, but they are doing that. So why can't you? So that is the thing now coming, that connection of pressure is coming. So now we have to cannot shoot more than 20 days. And a film that I just going to start next month, I talked to my producer and said, how many days you need? I said, it cannot be shot below 25 days because I have almost 170 scenes.
Wow.
And 35 locations. Then he said that, I don't know, I don't care how many scenes you have, but shooting more than 20 days is a crime in the industry. And and he's right. He is right. Then I got to know all the biggies of the industry. They are shooting for 20, 21 days. So I cannot ask for 25 days.
Yeah.
So that is how we have to shoot. So we cannot go relax. For the improvisation, what we do a prep of 2 months. Very strong rehearsal. All the thing what you have to do during the prep.
Hmm.
So when you go in the set, just deliver that what we have practiced.
Okay.
So this process perhaps is not right always, but we can't help it.
So you rely more on a strong pre-production
very strong we have
window.
We have to. Normally, in our industry, acclaimed director or any other director goes for 1 1/2 half of month of prep. I cannot go into the flow without 3 months of prep. For Ren Bujali, we had to do 6 months of prep.
So we were on your Twitter and we saw that Rainbow Jelly took 3 years to make. Mm-hmm. Were some of these the struggles relating mm-hmm. to why it took so long? Mm-hmm.
That is because when I've written the script after that, I had to get producer. In Bengali industry, when I was narrating the script to everyone that this is a food fantasy, taste would come into play, everyone is saying this is a typical thought process of art film and commercial film, which is very, very a bullshit thing of kind of thing. But they say this is ye to art film hai, something like that. But then I couldn't make them understand. After writing the entire script, when I narrated to the producer, everyone cried. And everyone said, wow. But then the struggle came. They say that, fine, I'm going to produce a film. But since the film is on a child, so anyone can be a child. So take my son, or take my nephew, take my blah, 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 blah. But I was very determined because even last night and after screening, I told that in my script, a line was there that when Ghoton smiles, the seven colors of the sun is very visible. So I had to get a smile like that. So then I was searching. And then I and my wife said that, no, it's a story on a special child. So we would take a special child. Because otherwise, that would be very funny. A normal child acting like a special child. And I don't know how special, rather we don't know how a special child thinks. So then we started screening of auditions of special children, but they were not very impressive for the character. Then a song that comes after the death of the mama, hmm. uncle, yeah. the song, yeah. it was sung by Moshumi Bhomik, a legendary singer in Bengal. I had to go to her and say that this is the nice script and blah, and I want protagonist. Now, he travels all around the country, and also she does workshops with the children. Then she said that there's a sort of special school of 15 to 16 children. There's a boy called Mahabrato. I like him very much. You can see him. So then Mahabrato came. And after that, with all smile effect, we got selected Mahabrato, and then we took him to the producer. And the producer said, no, he's a special child, he cannot act. I won't take the risk. So he wanted to back out. And that point of time, we had to back out. And it was perhaps 8 months before the shoot started, mm-hmm. actually. So then what to do? Then again, I pitched to some other producer with a detailed storyboard and the kind of thing. He said, okay, I'll do it. And again, seeing Mahabrato, he was not agreeing. So that was a kind of problem. But this is actually incurring a sort of stubbornness that, yes, we are on the right track. Then my wife said that, let's produce it. And how? Then we borrowed some, we mortgaged some, we taken loan from banks, personal interest. And then we started the shooting. Not shooting, the pre-production, and that was a tedious thing to do with Mahabrato. So by the time we were doing the pre-productions, we had all to pay the interest in the bank.
Yeah.
So this took time, and then we had gone to the floor, and we shot this film for 15 days.
Okay.
So because we didn't have money. So now when any producer is saying that, yes, you cannot shoot more than 20, I completely understand. So I said, okay, I won't shoot more than 20 days. So that is how it took time. Again, after the shooting, there was a lack of money. So the post-production got hampered. Most of the entire crew, actually, entire crew didn't take money. Most of the crew for the film itself, because we didn't have money. Only a few actors were given. A few senior technicians were given. And the entire junior technicians that comes from the industry union, that you have to pay every day. So yeah. that you have to pay.
Yeah.
But we have shot in almost in our friends' locations and things like that. So it was a fun. It's sort of a struggling picnic. But we had to do that.
So through all of this struggle, what do you think is the biggest experience that stood out for you while shooting Rainbow Jelly? What do you think stood out for you the most?
The thing that stood out for me is the value of time. the value of time. I never remember in my life I've ever valued time like this. Because I'm understanding every second. Because this time I have that logistics of economics with me. I'm understanding every minute, okay, I'm losing 5,000. Next 5 minutes, I'm losing 15,000. This is how the value of time came to me for this film in an economic manner. And I also learned through this struggle that what your intuition says, that hardly can be wrong.
So do you think that you have to always find a balance between critical and commercial success? Because when you're working on a relatively smaller budget and you're submitting a movie to film festivals and things like that, are you relying more on it being a critical success, or are you hoping that a commercial producer would give it a wide release?
For films, this is a huge debate that always I have to fight for. Most of the directors, and they would always blame me that you're turning into something that don't go into that line. But for me, it's a very clear bottom line that what is cinema? Cinema is a mass communication. I am making things for people. And I'm always been very pro people in my life. I'm always been very pro people. I'm always been not very close to institutions, organizations. I'm always been pro people. So I believe cinema is always successful when it is exposed to a larger number of audience. So for me, those critical acclamations, I think, is much better to come from the people itself.
So now that Rainbow Jelly has been a success, do you have any plans for the future? Any new projects that you're coming up with?
Yeah, we have plans, and we have to start a film in November also. But that's not yet finalized with the casting, so I cannot divulge much. But this process of filming has started after Rainbow Jelly, because the success, it ran for 6 weeks in Kolkata with almost 13 house full shows, which is a thing in Kolkata nowadays. So that is what Rainbow Jelly became a box office thing also. So that is why I'm getting offers to make films. So that is how things go.
The film Rainbow Jelly plays around a lot with the themes of like the difference between like a childlike fantasy reality and the harshness of true reality.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you go about making this vision where Rainbow Jelly tries to bridge the gap between the two?
Between the harsh reality
and the childlike fantasy that we have, which we see through Gorton's eyes.
Okay, yes. That is the life of everyone. That is, I believe that we all have a child in ourselves that we might call as an aboriginal child self that we all have. When we have made this film, I have always told that this is not a children's film. This is a film for the child self within you. And I can ensure the parents that come with your kids and ensure you that you can enjoy the film equally and would get disturbed if your son even asks a question. So that happens. And many of the audience said that my son or my daughter is equally involved, and we both discussed and we both fought on the context that no, that is what Poppin said, no, that is what Gautam said. So slowly to take out the child self within you. Cinema has that power to get into your mind and to deal with your mind, because cinema is something to me is that not always what you see around. For me, cinema is something what you see after closing your eyes. So that is a reflection of your mind. If you can take cinema to that level, then the mind would connect to the cinema directly. And that is how you can actually fall back on a cinema, believing that this cinema is speaking my mind. You see the examples of the greatest films. Many are very realistic. Those are very necessary for the social perspective. But for me, there's a typical, for me personally, the typical division of audiovisual medium. I say I have three stages of audiovisual thing. One is movie, one is film, and one is cinema. The movie to me is something that which entertains you and you like it and you love it. That sort of thing that Karan Johar, Yash Chopra and all are there, Ramesh Sippy doing a lot. Then a thing that comes for the film, where it would tickle your thought process, and the thought process would nudge your mind. Then comes the cinema, which would directly penetrate to your mind and would go up to the brain to get justified, and wouldn't care if the brain cannot justify. So that is cinema for me. So I'm trying to make cinema. I don't know how far I have been successful or how far I would be successful, but I'm trying to make cinema like that, which would make people transported to a different part in that time when he or she is seeing the cinema and also after the thing. Have you seen Interstellar, Chris Nolan?
Yeah.
So what Nolan does there, you see, he travels from Earth physically with the spaceship. Then goodbye to our solar system, goodbye to our galaxy. From the Saturn black hole, he enters to a new dimensions, and then to a new dimensions, and then to some other dimension where that book wrecks on all come. And what happens after that, which is not justified? What happens after that? After that, after seeing everything, suddenly, after knowing everything, everything starts stopping. And then a huge white splash, and then a huge black splash, and then we find the protagonist floating outside Saturn. So, which is physically not possible according to the scientist. When you're traveling to the black hole, then again I have to come out to the black hole through the same way of speed of light or more than speed of light. How is it possible? But that is what is actually there in our yogic system, which is called Sushupti. What happens there for the protagonist when he goes there, and after that is shutting down, after a huge splash of light that is shutting down, and everything is black and he's coming out. So there Nolan is actually clubbing the physical reality with that metaphysical reality of Sushupti. In what dreams, what happens? In dreams, we go to stages of consciousness, and after a point of time, we don't know, a blackout. And that is called a Sushupti. And after that, you come out and you start in another dream, perhaps, or you go to bathroom, or again, you wake up a brush teeth. But that Sushupti is the most mystified state of consciousness, and which cannot be justified yet by the physical science. Though after Hawking, after Roger Penrose, much of the thing being justified, that is a very interesting thing. That is why cinema is going to this level. You see the prior thing, that is Space Odyssey, 2001 Space Odyssey, which cannot go to the extent that Interstellar has been traveled, because Hawking and Penrose was not that popular that time. But if you see Solaris, have you seen Solaris?
Solaris, no.
There's a very poor American remake of it, but the main film is made by the Russian filmmaker Andrei Tarkovsky. If you see Solaris, you can find trails of everything that Nolan is using in current times. Even Inception, when the Leo is seeing his wife and is vanishing, because from his thought process she's vanishing. Yeah. That is the part of Solaris. So much before that, in time of 80s, Tarkovsky dealt with this physical and metaphysical part. So at that time, that was very poetic, not scientifically, logically explained because of the absence of the logics. But now, since after Hawking and Penrose, this can be understood. So that is how things is going to that level. So that is cinema to me, where you can actually make it logical with a story, emotions and everything, and also mathematics, that this is thing, what you're dreaming can be made up to cinema and can be said that this is a life can be. So that is cinema to me.
So you are creating a correlation between Solaris and, let's say, Interstellar. So do you think that commercial filmmakers, they tend to at some point take a cue from what is cinema as you described it?
But I would love to, if that happens. That is an ecstatic moment for me. That would be. But what? That's not my point. My point is that film should also be. Film should not always be looking to what people want, because I don't know whether we know that what people want or not. Rather, who are people? We are also the people. I'm an audience also. So I would like to see films like that. Who knows that there are thousands, millions of audience like me. What happens to Chris Nolan? If you see his film, you remain glued to your seat. You don't know what is happening. We are not from the physics background. I'm not understanding this, but I'm glued to it. What, for the Interstellar, what Nolan said, that what excited me is the father-daughter relationship. So that is what is that black hole, the wormhole is. That is the emotion of mind. So that emotion of the wormhole, you can travel up to logic and even can null the logic. And we can make people convinced that, yes, that can happen. And if you see, most of the time, even in the talks of Hawking, it has been much said that most of the time, the greatest inventions in science has come from art. From Da Vinci to everyone, they have cracked it much before. Only the mathematical logistics has to be done and has to be approved by a government seal, and then we would ready to agree on that. I have no problem on that. But art has been always the father of science every time, from starting to Da Vinci to Solaris and everything. Have you seen Matrix?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So what is Matrix? Matrix would be the Bible in the coming 100 years. And the way we perhaps read Veda in our philosophy, in case of cinema, I think Matrix would be considered as a Veda of cinema. Mm. It is saying everything in such a brilliant manner, my God, and is so logical. And if you see in the commercial success, no one could match up to Matrix.
Yeah.
So it's not like that. You have to hit a chord which would spread out to most of the minds. And perhaps all of them are waiting for that, but they didn't know that they're waiting for that.
So basically, audiences don't know what they want until you give it to them.
That's what Job said, but I believe that perhaps we don't know what audience want. I think people normally are so busy for the living, so busy for collecting their livelihood, they are not at all being given the chance to think. That I believe. So when they are given the chance to think, they think the right thing. So that is why so much of war happens. That is why so much of death, so much of rape happens. But I think the entire system outside, which is so cluttered, so curling down the entire process in the name of profit, that can be, the loophole can be identified in art form only. Because science cannot do that. Because science is primarily backed by that economic system. Only art has that power or that audacity to say something that this economic system wouldn't support you. So that is what Vinci did. That is what all the later philosopher and artists did. So, and why art form is much stronger? Because this art form has a logic and also has an emotion which can touch and tickle human mind. So through this art form only, you can take the people a bit in a relaxed zone and can make them think about it. And they would perhaps go for the next, getting the trails from the art form.
Okay, so this is just our last question. We saw that during when you were directing Pendulum, you worked with Radhika Apte. Mm-hmm. So since then, she's gone on to gain a lot of commercial critical success. And she's practically ruling Netflix India. Mm-hmm. So what was your experience of working with her on Pendulum?
Radhika is one of the finest actors I've worked with, definitely, that everybody would agree upon, is one of the finest actors. But Radhika is a fantastic human being. When he came for Pendulum to shoot, at that time he was quite a star in South Indian industry, in Marathi industry, and also in Bengal industry. Before that, prior to that, she had done a very major, huge Bengali film. But she is a very exceptional person. And that was my first film. I was not that much experienced. So there was a little bit haywire in the schedule and everything. I remember shooting for continuously 32 hours without a break because Radhika had to go back to Bombay. And she didn't complain. And most of that, above everything, Radhika also thinks in a very somber manner, where she addresses a character very differently from what the writer might have thought. And that is only possible because perhaps for a theater background, she can go into a psychology of a character and can come out and can again address the same character with a different psychology, that process of acting. And that is why you have much options when Radhika is acting, much options with the pattern of acting. And that only comes when your mind is very relaxed, mind is very free, mind is not very knitted with grit and jealousy and all. Radhika is a very somber and very sweet girl who's very, very much needed in modern cinema.
Well said. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And this program was brought to you by Akshay Thimai and Avdhi Balgat, students from Symbiosis Center for Media and Communication, who encourage you to really check out Rainbow Jelly at the earliest and all the other work by Mr. Ghoshal. Thank you for listening.